This is episode 384 of JumbleThink.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to JumbleThink, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality, too. Our guest on today's show is Michelle Danner. More about Michelle in a moment. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, if you've never subscribed to JumbleThink, now's the time to do it. Head on over to wherever you listen to podcasts, search for JumbleThink, and click subscribe. To make it even easier, if you head on over to jumblethink.com, you'll find links to Apple Podcasts, Pandora, Spotify, and more. So make sure you subscribe to the show and never miss another episode of JumbleThink. Hey there, friends. Welcome to JumbleThink. My name is Michael Woodward. I am your host. We have an incredible guest on the show today. Our guest is Michelle Danner, and over the last 30 years, she has both been a director and filmmaker and a performer, but also an acting coach for some of the biggest names, the A-list stars of Hollywood. She is the head of the Los Angeles Acting School. She's worked with actors and actresses like James Franco, Zoe Deschanel, Chris Rock, Chris Martin, Penelope Cruz, Seth MacFarlane, and a whole slew of other people. She has a new movie out, and we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about the art of acting. We're going to be talking about filmmaking. It is a fascinating conversation. So let's go ahead and join the conversation with today's guest, Michelle Danner. We are here with Michelle Danner. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us here on JumbleThink.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Excited about this conversation in that we've talked to a lot of actors, we've talked to celebrities, but we get to see behind the scenes a little bit here on what it takes to teach an actor or to direct an actor or to create story. We love story. So I'm excited to chat about what you're doing and how you got here.
Well, I was born into my mother was singing and dancing, and my dad was an important impresario, agent, producer in Europe when I was a little girl. So I was raised in an environment of artistic energy. I would hide under my dad's desk at the William Morris Agency because he was the president of the first offices that were launched in Paris off the Champs-Élysées. Wow. So as a little girl, I would hide, and all these French actors and singers and celebrities would come in and then come to the house for dinner. And apparently I was told that I entertained them by putting on a show, imitations of Alfred Hitchcock and Judy Garland and Ed Sullivan. And I would tap dance as a three-year-old, two-year-old girl on the coffee table. So, that was I had a great upbringing. Also, because I went to school in France and I was introduced to literature, and therefore I loved words. I loved writers, literature, and I was an avid reader as a young girl. And I worked on a lot of those French classics on stage before I moved as a teenager to New York City, where I got to study with some great iconic teachers such as Stella Adler and Uta Hagen and many, many other teachers. I loved to learn. And so I would run all over New York City just trying to learn from as many people as I could.
Wow. It sounds like you hear of families that Zoe Deschanel and her sister, they grew up in a family where their dad was in production of films. You look at so many different people in Hollywood are multi-generational families. And it sounds like that's your story a little bit, that you got into this because of exposure, because being around it and falling in love with it as a kid.
Absolutely. I think that I was just exposed. Even now, I enjoy watching French shows, and I speak five languages. But I think that what you're exposed as when you're young, of course, shapes you and fuels your creativity. your love for the arts. And I was very lucky. I feel that I was exposed to that at a young age. And also, being raised in Europe and traveling all over Europe, it seems to me, I'm sure it wasn't, but it seems to me like every Sunday, we would go do a field trip to the Chateau de Versailles, and walk through the Trianon and all of the, I'm sure it was once in a while, but I just remember it as being every week. And we'd go to museums all the time, and we'd go to see other castles, and we'd travel all over Europe. So that kind of richness of culture is something that I grew up with, and I'm, very grateful for.
Yeah, what an opportunity, an experience to be a part of that. And I love that your dad made space for you. So often we see parents who are like, here's my work life, I'm going to go do my thing, stay out of my way while I'm over here. And then when they're home, hey, we're going to go play sports, we're going to do whatever that is. And yet your dad gave space for you to sit at his feet at the desk and to be involved with this and to get a glimpse into it. That must have been really empowering as a child to feel that safety.
He was a very, very good dad. As a matter of fact, he would work a lot. He had a lot of responsibility. He was the president of the William Morris Agency in Paris for many years. And then he went on his own and he went on to do some huge, huge events. He would call me from all over the world, not only Bea, but my sisters too. When I did the eulogy, I did get a smile from everybody because I said, we're four girls. That my dad made us all feel like we were his favorite. But he would call from all over the world and always check in, always be connected to what we were doing. How did that test go? How did that go? And, once I even remember, at the time we lived in this castle in France, because like I said, he was like a big deal. And so we had, the limo shows up the morning that I have my first day of school. I believe it was in the fifth grade. And he came just from Tokyo just to take me to school for the first day. And then he went right back on the plane and went back to close a business deal he was working on. And a child never forgets that. No. A child never forgets going to the office with their mother or father. You never forget it when your parents make you feel like you're number one.
Yeah, it's really important. As a dad of two young daughters, I get to work from my house here. My office is here. And it's as a father, it's an honor to get to do that for them and be a part of their life and make them know that they're special. How did you end up in New York? You end up studying you mentioned Stella Adler and Uta Hagen, and then you end up in LA to found the Los Angeles Acting Conservatory and the Edgemar Center for the Arts. How did you pivot out to LA? How did you end up there and then starting these amazing organizations?
Well, I was also acting, as I studied. I love acting to this day. I do. And I do it whenever, the right opportunity comes up. So I went to LA to audition and I ended up doing, I can't remember what it was. But anyway, I went down to The Wire with the networks for a show. I didn't get it, but it prompted me to move to Los Angeles. And I started to help actors and work with them. So I was faced with either going to an audition that would take me, two auditions that would take me the whole entire day with traffic, more traffic back then, but now traffic is starting up again in LA, or work with, actors that kept calling me. I used to have 8-9 coachings a day back to back. So either I had to cancel the bulk of that to go on two auditions or work with actors. So I remember distinctly walking on the beach one day, because that's where I end up making all my important decisions in life, and saying, I just think I need to just work with actors. So I took a step back from acting. I told my agent, at the time I had a wonderful agent, and I was coaching every single day. I coach a little less now because I'm directing movies and I'm doing other things. But I used to really coach a tremendous amount. And I enjoyed it. And I forged relationships with people that I, to this day, I'm in touch with. So it's been a great gift to be able to pass down all the things that I've learned throughout the years as an actress, studying technique, you know, working with great iconic teachers. And I think that that's always, you know, the duty and the responsibility is to pass it down to the next generation.
You mentioned there that you're directing more. You have a new film out called The Runner, which premiered in March. You, 2 years ago, pre-pandemic, 2019, is that two or three now? Well, whatever it is, a couple years ago, you released a movie called Bad Impulse. Really fun projects. I want to talk more about them, but before we pivot into that, you teach acting and then you direct. So your job has been working with, your career has been working with actors at two different kind of stages. One is that coaching, mentoring, teaching them the raw skills, but the other side is giving them direction, enabling them to connect with a script or a story. Talk to us a little bit about the difference of those two approaches.
Yes, that's a great question. And there is a big difference. You know, when you teach, you want to empower your students with the tools so that they can be independent, that they can go out on sets and on stage and make choices that will make the story come to life. When you are directing it, you are the captain of the ship and responsible to sign the painting. So you have to have the overall vision in your mind and make sure that every decision, every choice, including, you know, actors' choices, are true to that vision. So it's a cohesive, you know, fabric of storytelling. So, you know, I always tell my students, for instance, in class, if I get directorial just to prove a point, I will say to them, I'm about to be directorial right now. I'm going to be result-oriented. I'm going to give a note like that. Usually what I try to do is really teach, you know, my actors to create their toolbox. I call it the golden box because I'm not dogmatic in my thinking that it should be one philosophy or another. I believe that every philosophy is valid and important, and you should, you know, take from it the things, you know, are helpful to you. Because everybody's different, you know. You cannot say everybody come to the middle and be the same. Every actor is unique. So every actor will find sets of tools that are helpful to them in that moment. Now, I'll tell you that one night I was teaching in my theater in Santa Monica, and all the lights went out on Main Street. And so there were three scenes left in class, and I told my students to hold up their phone and to light the space. And we did some wonderful work, and then there was this one actor that particularly, you know, brought chills, you know, gave me chills. He's from Finland, Edouard Philipponin. And I had this script, The Runner, that I had been working on, which is behind me, which is a story that I came up with, a treatment that I wrote. And then I gave it to a wonderful writer, Jason Chase Terrell, a friend of mine, to write the screenplay. And I said, I gave it to this actor that was in my class. And sure enough, he was the right person to play it because he does give an extraordinary performance in the movie. We're on the festival circuit right now. We are winning some awards, which is really exciting. The movie will probably be released in the late fall. We're going to go now this summer. We're going to Italy. We're going to the Ischia Film Festival, which is a great film festival. So I'm very excited about this movie. And I'm excited that all my students came on set and worked on it. And there's nothing like that hands-on experience that you get when you're there and you see how movies are made. So I was definitely very lucky to, and I am very lucky to keep working with this extraordinary talent. You know, I love teaching and I love directing. So, you know, every day I'm thankful for that.
One of the, as I did research, I watched a few video clips of you sharing and teaching and talking at various things that you were doing. And one of the quotes that just struck me, especially when you take it and dissect it one step further and apply that quote back to you, the quote is, actors are the teachers of humanity and you are the teacher of the actors. And so how much of acting, you know, you talk about that golden box, and it's about your job is to equip them with various tools that they can build their golden box with. But how much of what you're doing is really helping them connect with humanity and understanding how to represent humanity through acting in these stories?
Well, as an actor, I think you have to be connected to humanity and to your own humanity in order to be that teacher, that storyteller, which is the mandate. You know, I always say it's like the Mission Impossible thing. If you choose to accept the mission, that's what it entails, you know. It entails that bravery. It entails, you know, having that courage to connect, you know, with your humanity. I mean, it's really important. And sometimes it hurts. I was recently talking about the different milestones, you know, of COVID and how that's affected us. And every single time, well, way back, you know, last year, when they were predicting that there was going to be, you know, 250,000 people were going to die. And I remember I literally had a sob, my whole, you know, my kids came to console me. And then a month later, I had to console them because of course, we know that the toll was more than 250,000, you know, more than double of that. But, you know, that's the job. I think, you know, if you're an artist, you have to empathize. And you had, you know, so in the moment where I was, you know, just literally having starting to sob, you know, and it was painful, and it's painful to hook into your humanity. And that's why sometimes you don't want to, you know, because there's a price to pay for it. I mean, and I don't think that I've had since then a similar reaction. I think that was like the biggest reaction that I've had, because we protect ourselves from not feeling it to that degree. But ultimately, I think that if you can go there and if you can feel it, it's better than to not feel it. And for actors, especially because actors are these teachers, I see them as being teachers. You know, if you're willing to pay the price and to go to that place, however painful it may be, you know, it certainly, I think, would raise the bar in terms of making you a better artist, a better storyteller.
As we wrap up this first segment, I want to give some practical tips to those people who aspire, whether it's to be an actor or a director. You have acted, you've taught actors, you've directed. What are some things that they could do as their first practical steps to explore this career, this opportunity, these roles, whether it's on stage, whether it's on TV, whether it's in film, whether it's directing behind the camera? What are the things that they need to do to explore and really figure out, is this right for me?
Well, I'm a big proponent of studying, you know, really, really studying. We're in an extraordinary time right now. I mean, you know, 5 years ago, we were talking about it's the golden age of television, not television, but television shows.
Yeah.
It continues to be so, even with, you know, this this pandemic. I thought to myself, well, certainly the reservoir of new shows, the reservoir of content is going to dry up. But it hasn't. Every single month is, this is what's new that you can see. This is what you can see. And of course, if you haven't seen, you know, shows that are, you know, iconic shows, and if you haven't seen Breaking Bad or Mad Men, or I'm watching right now this French show called The Bureau, which I'm loving, which, you know, started in 2015. I mean, if you haven't, you know, it's your chance to catch up. But I mean, there's so many things to watch, but not only watch, but study. My children are my greatest teachers, and they showed me the plays in London at the National Theatre. Some of them you can, you know, watch them and rent them. And we watched Young Frankenstein, which was incredible, with Benedict Cumberbatch. And, you know, this idea of studying, and now this Van Gogh exhibit is coming, immersive exhibit here in LA, it's in San Francisco here, it's absolutely, and, you know, amazing. Every single time you can go and do and research and have conversations with people and study and expand yourself and do things that you normally wouldn't do, that's how you grow. And so as an artist, you want to put yourself in a place where every single day is growth. Mm-hmm. Whether you're reading something that's sparking you, you're watching something that is moving you, you're scheduling a rehearsal on Zoom. Zoom is great. You know, I mean, at first I resented it, but now I really love it. It's just and you can connect intimately on Zoom. Well, yes, is it better to do it in person? Of course. but Zoom is, I think, holds a lot in terms of, you know, not stopping your creative growth. And it was a lifesaver, I think, during this last year.
You know, I was doing my research in preparation for the conversation, and on your website, you have your in-person training, you have all of these great programs, but you also offer an online program for people who might not be in LA, and even a section for people who are just beginning. How can people find you and connect with what you're doing, whether it's virtually, whether it's through an in-person programs that you do? What are some of the ways they can connect, and what are some of the ways they can learn from you?
We've always had an online program, which is interesting, because then when this happened, you know, it did expand absolutely through this year, but we've always had it. We've had it for years. But when it expanded, you know, people, what's great is it brings together people from all over the world. And so I've had in my class somebody who's in Saudi Arabia, somebody who's in Turkey, somebody, yeah, it's just somebody who's in Venezuela. And so we have different points of views from all over the world, somebody from South Africa. I've particularly enjoyed this idea because, you know, the community of actors is worldwide. And then from all over the U.S., because, I mean, if you're, you know, in Atlanta, or if you're in New Orleans, or if you're anywhere in the U.S., you're not here in L.A. You can't come in person and do classes. We have done classes. We've been doing them for a while with a lot of safety precautions. Our students have been very safe, knock wood. We've not had one single problem. Our students are also wanting to, everybody is getting vaccinated, all the teachers. So people feel safe. People feel safe to explore their creativity, whether it be in person or whether it brings together you know, diverse parts of the country on Zoom.
Now, is going to michelledanner.com the best place to learn about this? Is there other places that they can learn and connect with you?
Michelledanner.com, there's a great place. Instagram, Michelle Danner LA. That's another great place. Yeah, they can go on our website, the Los Angeles Acting Conservatory, Michelle Danner Acting Studio, and they'll find us. I have a great faculty of just extraordinary teachers. So it isn't just me, but it's other wonderful people. I believe in studying with different people so they can pass it down. You know, that's the band-aid. That's the responsibility.
We're going to take a break right here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about your project, The Runner, and more about that and what you're doing. And I'm excited to learn a little bit about the film festival process, too, and how you're positioning that. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about the directorial side of what Michelle's doing. We'll be right back. There are a lot of exciting things happening here at JumbleThink. One of the ones we've been waiting for years to do is to launch the show not only in audio format, but fully in video. And we're even going to be doing some of these interviews completely live on Facebook and YouTube. With that and some other exciting announcements that we have in store, along with free giveaways, we want to make sure you are in the know of what's happening at JumbleThink. There's two great ways to do it. Head on over to your favorite social media channel, whether that's Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and, you know, subscribe to the show there or follow us there. You can also head on over to jumblethink.com and you'll find links to all those social channels, along with our email newsletter. If you sign up for the email newsletter, you are signed up for those giveaways. Best of all, not only are those giveaways free, but when you sign up for the newsletter, you're going to get the free Dreamer's Guide to Micro Experiments. It's a really cool strategy for turning those dreams and ideas into reality. So head on over to jumblethink.com or your favorite social media channel and let's connect. Now let's jump back into today's conversation. We are back with Michelle. All right. You have a new film out called The Runner. It premiered in March, and you're on the film festival circuit. Before we dive into the film festival side and then how people are going to be able to watch this, tell us a little bit about this story and how it came to be.
The Runner was a screenplay that started with me watching a news report late at night and about how kids were forced to wire up when police caught them doing something bad in school, like selling pot or something, and enforcing them to, for a greater good, to bring down the drug, you know, of the town. But sometimes, because parents were not alerted, and these are underage kids, tragedies would happen. So I particularly was listening to this one story that just got me. And I started to write. And the day after I woke up and I asked this great writer, would he write the screenplay of this? And it was he said it was a tough screenplay for him to write. It took him a couple of years to write it. So it was a few years in the making. But he would just do notes and do another draft and another draft, and, you know, the usual. but we worked hard, and then it was a meant to be thing. We weren't going to shoot it till April, but then we ended up shooting it a few months earlier, which is great because I hate to say it, probably would have not happened. It would just got it right in time, right before the lockdown happened. And so I had this whole entire year to edit. And I learned a great lesson because I edited in a very relaxed way. I didn't feel on the treadmill because we didn't know what was happening. So we were like, you know, whenever I'll edit for 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, just really loose. And I think that it's probably some of my best work because I didn't put that pressure on myself. So I learned a great lesson.
It almost seems like COVID allowed you to have the time and the capacity to really process the story in a way that you wouldn't have processed editing. You mentioned editing there. You wouldn't have edited the same. And so do you feel like that's made the film stronger by having the freedom to take the time and really craft a picture?
Absolutely. I really want to memorize and take this with me in my other projects. Because I think that when you muscularize and you demand of yourself and you push that, and you give yourself that pressure, I should be further ahead than where I'm at. It should be here. It should be there. And that's not good enough. It's not conducive to the best art that you can create. And so, I mean, I see it by the response that I'm getting with this film. I think that my relaxation throughout the, you know, the process of putting it together, it shows. And so I'm going to make sure that I take these lessons with me for the next one.
You know, I think it's a little interesting on how you're approaching this compared to like a traditional studio would approach this, because you'd have casting directors and you'd have all kinds of different roles that you're probably filling a lot of those shoes in what you're doing. Casting is so important. You mentioned in the first segment that you had a student, I think from Finland, that ended up being the perfect fit for the role. And so walk us through, you have this story, it's marinating and being crafted and revised over 5 years. And now you're in this place of casting and starting to actually put the film together. At that stage, how did you process this is the right actor for the role? This is the right fit. This is the right chemistry.
I have great respect for casting directors, and they're absolutely essential. But it did so happen that I think I'm in a unique place of knowing and having relationships and having worked with so many actors, so many talented actors, that when it comes time to cast, I visualize the person's face. And I usually, not always, because sometimes there's scheduling issues, but most of the time I was lucky enough to get my first choice. And so, for instance, Elizabeth Rome, she's a wonderful actress. I'm about to meet her in the next hour. I'm going to go shoot her interview for the movie. And she was my first choice. Her just, you know, I loved her work. Eric Balfour, I loved his work. Cameron Douglas, I had heard him speak on an interview on Nightline about how much he loved to act. And I responded to that, and I asked him, and we met, and he said yes. So I, you know, I have this access to all these wonderful artists. So I've been able to just pick up the phone, or, you know, or call the agent, and cast it. But I'm prepping for another movie, and we're bringing on a casting director. It just happens that I have an ease with it, and I'm able to pick up the phone just because I know so many people. And so I can put the family together. I can put the pieces of the puzzle together. So yeah, the Runner and the movie that came out in December, Bad Impulse, a psychological thriller, also written by the same writer, Jason Chase Terrell. Both were cast by, and you know, I shouldn't say just me. I have my wonderful co-producer works on the casting with me, Josie Heiss. And so we, you know, it's a collaborative effort.
So you film the movie, and it's this really interesting subject that I don't think we've seen a lot of intertwining youth and drugs and all of that. You're in this circuit now where you're showcasing the movie in various film festivals. Walk us through what that looks like and the feedback you're getting from people.
We've gotten some really incredible feedback. We premiered the movie at Cinequest, which is a great film festival, premiered virtually. And we went ahead and ended World Fest in Houston, where we won an award for Best Suspense Thriller. And then we won others. And we were in Ferrara last week. And then we're going to go, like I said, to Ischia, which I'm really excited about because I haven't been in that part of the world yet.
Wow.
In Italy. And we were going to go last year, but of course, you know, we couldn't. But we're going this year. People have been responding to the movie and to thematically what the movie is about. In a very powerful way. And it really makes me feel like the powerful response that I had to the story that night of, you know, how our kids can sometimes fall through the cracks, mm-hmm. which is an important thematic thing that affects me because I'm a mom of two boys. And I can see how kids fall through the cracks and, you know, terrible things happen. And it's our job to protect our kids. And what happens when we don't take care of our kids. But people are really responding to that, theme, to what the movie is really about. So, and there's a twist, there's a big twist at the end, and some people are getting it and some people are not getting it. And I think it has to do with how you view life, what your philosophy is on life, whether you get that twist or not. But it's ambiguous. It's just like a European movie. I always say the ambiguity of European movies in terms of what happens at the end.
What are the ways people can find out more about this film? How can they or when can they actually watch it?
Well, I'm pretty sure we're going to have a premiere of the Chinese late October. So I'm pretty sure it'll be out by late October, November. So they'll be able to watch it on platforms. It'll have a theatrical release, and they'll be able to watch it on all the platforms, including on demand and Amazon, you know, all the major platforms.
Super cool. I can't wait till it's out. I can't wait to see it. We're going to take a break right here. And in a moment, we're going to come back for some rapid fire questions. We'll be right back. I am a part of a lot of really cool events. One of my favorites is called PodMax. PodMax brings podcasters like me together with amazing business leaders and entrepreneurs to hear their stories and get to share them on our show. This event's unlike many because we record the interviews right there as a part of the event. This one-day event, it's a lot of fun. Not only are you going to get on shows, but you're also going to get some really cool breakout sessions with amazing rock stars in the business world. And you're going to get to be a part of a community that really cares about not only podcasting, but business. So if you are a business leader and you want to get your message out on shows like mine, I want you to go to check out PodMax. You can check them out at podmax.co, podmax.co. And I hope that you will join us. Tell your story and let people know the amazing things you are doing. So go check them out, podmax.co, and become part of the PodMax family at this incredible event.
Votre électrophone à portée de votre main. Levez seulement le bras.
We are back with Michelle Danner. All right, are you ready for some rapid fire questions?
Absolutely, go for it.
As a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
An actress.
What is one thing you wish you would have known when you first started out?
That everything is a giant yes, and not to, get in my way.
If somebody has a big idea or dream and they don't know where to start, where should they start?
They should start at the beginning. They should get, they should study. They should research. They should learn.
What is one book you think every dreamer should read?
The Unfettered Soul by Michael Singer.
You're in LA. You're around the cool, the hip. You are influencing that. What's one trend you are getting excited about right now?
Wow, my God, that we are able to go to the movies. One trend, is that a trend?
Hopefully it's a re-emerging trend that people will embrace.
So we can just, go back to see live theater.
If you were to define success, how would you define it for your own life?
To, find serenity, peace, happiness.
Our final rapid fire question. What is one dream you're still wanting to fulfill in your own life?
No, I think I'm living my dream. I'm doing everything. I'm very clear on what my dreams are. So I'm making it happen.
As we wrap up, we always like to leave our guests have a final thought for all of us listening today. What do you want to leave us with?
It's great to have conversations, including the conversation that we just had. I think the more you listen, you really listen, is the more you're able to access that deep, rich part inside of yourself. So I actually listened to you today and you asked me some really good questions.
It's been a lot of fun having you on, and I'm not going to let you go that easily. I have one last question. It's a wild card question. I throw it in every once in a while. You have worked with some big names in Hollywood: Christian Slater, James Franco, Chris Martin, Selma Hayek, Gerald Butler, Seth MacFarlane, Penelope Cruz, Chris Rock, Zoe Deschanel. It's a long, long list. Do you have any fun stories about a favorite celebrity encounter that you had personally, or someone that you just really enjoy working with?
Well, first of all, I've enjoyed working with everybody that you mentioned on that list. But if I have to say that there was a life-changing moment when I worked with Chris Rock, he shared something with me, and I want to write him a letter about this because he really helped me to be a better parent. And it was about giving freedom to your children to be what they're meant to be, what they want to be. And he told me that story and how, it applied to him. And I, in turn, used it as a great, parenting tool, not to put pressure on my own children and let them be. And I can see how that's worked so well because I have two very healthy, very happy, creative kids. So I'll always remember that moment with Chris Rock. He came to learn from me, but I actually learned from him.
Love that story. Michelle, it's been an honor to hear about what you do. It's super fascinating. To all of our listeners, I just encourage you, go check out the website. The links are in the episode notes. And connect up with Michelle. Learn from her. Learn from somebody who has deep wealth of knowledge in this space. And just thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Once again, I want to thank Michelle for taking time out and joining us here on Jumble Think. She's doing some really cool stuff, not only the movie The Runner, but also the acting school and a lot more. Those links, so you can check them out, they're right in the episode notes. You don't have to search for them. You don't have to hunt for them. You don't have to Google Michelle. They're right there. So go check that out in the episode notes. Go check out what Michelle's doing and connect with her. I want to thank you for tuning into today's show. It means the world to me that you would listen. I hope something from today's show has inspired your dreams, your ideas, your purpose for the thing you are here on earth to do. Our passion is to help spark something and give you some tools to help you chase those dreams and ideas. Now, I hope that we've sparked something today, but it's up to you to do the next step, to step out, to take the risk, to chase those dreams and ideas. So now it's your turn. Get out there, dream big, and change the world around you.
Serrez-vous doucement, mais complètement. En avant, en arrière, sur les côtés. Vous êtes une autre personne. Les mères de famille, les enfants, peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant. Dans quelques mois, lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.